This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
More earnings coming out.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's the morning open, a check on the economy just minutes into the trading week now. Aetna, not so glad about a dip in profits. Verizon, the first to come this week among the telecoms. Thought lending was loosening? Not so fast. First, where's Wall Street? Mixed right now. The S&P and Dow both down about 0.1%. The NASDAQ up 0.1%. We got word from Aetna that profits there fell by 28%. It blames higher medical expenses in the commercial business. Asian shares closed higher today, and European markets are mixed as well right now. Sam Stovall is chief strategist for S&P Equity Research. He's joining us live from New York this morning. Hi, Sam.
Good morning, Steve.
So Verizon reported in just a few minutes ago, quarterly profits there down 7%, the first of the telecoms coming out this week. Doesn't everyone and his mother have a cell phone, Sam? Shouldn't they be like bursting at the seam right now?
Well, that's a good question, but actually most of the earnings and revenues come from landlines or the telephones you have in your home. And because fewer new homes are being built, plus we're seeing an increase in unemployment, that's why we're seeing the decline in earnings.
All right, I'm going to ask you to hang on a second, Sam, because we keep hearing about a recovery and the credit markets opening up, but lending among banks is still pretty anemic. We're going to hear from Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman.
Wall Street Journal analysis shows total lending by the country's biggest banks fell nearly 3% in the second quarter. That's despite billions in government bailout money. Mark Zandi of MoodysEconomy.com says without the bailout, lending would have fallen even more, and he says some of the pullout is just from being prudent.
Lenders did extend out too much credit, provided loans to businesses and households that probably shouldn't have gotten it. But I also think banks are very reluctant to extend credit to businesses, households that in more normal times they would give credit to.
And that's reflected in mortgage lending as well, which makes another number coming out this morning seem a bit of a contradiction. Economists predict new home sales rose around 3% in June. Turns out even with bank lending down, home prices have fallen so much that sales are finally picking up. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Back with Sam Stovall from S&P. And Sam, all this money to bail out banks to get loans back on the front burner, but everyday people are really feeling the pinch. Why are the big guys getting relief, but it seems like no one else is?
Well, I think the question really is, where is that money going and is it truly being lended? I think that lending is taking place, but now it's back to the old model where you lend it to those people who really do have the ability to pay it back. And then also in the home front area, that most of the lending is coming from the government through Fannie Mae, et cetera, and that's where they are being bailed out.
Or any maybe loan modification programs, things like that.
Exactly right. So basically the consumer is trying to be aided by the government just the way the banks are being helped out.
All right. Sam Stovall, thank you for joining us this morning. We do appreciate it.
Happy to be here.
All right. Ben Bernanke got a lot of questions about small businesses and why they're allowed to fail while the AIGs and the Citigroups get a bailout. Bernanke told a Kansas City town hall meeting last night that he didn't want to be the Fed chairman to preside over the second Great Depression. So he, quote, held his nose when bailing out big financial companies to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars. PBS's Jim Lehrer moderated the discussion that will air this week in three separate installments. Listening to the Morning Report for Monday, July 27th, 2009, at Marketplace.org. The British economy as a whole continues to languish, but one area of activity is twitching and showing signs of life. The banks, bailed out and propped up by the British taxpayer, seem to be recovering, and the bankers are preparing to rake in the bonuses once again. From London, Stephen Beard reports.
Only 6 months ago, some of Britain's biggest banks faced collapse. As they begged for taxpayers' cash, the bankers lined up before a parliamentary committee and apologised.
We are extremely sorry.
There's a profound and unqualified apology.
We are profoundly, and I think I would say unreservedly, sorry.
6 months on and not much sign of contrition in Britain's financial district, this exclusive rooftop restaurant is packed with financial types. John Purcell, one of London's top headhunters, meets his clients here. He says the good times are just beginning to roll again, especially for the star traders and dealers, the so-called rainmakers.
We've just heard that one of these rainmakers has just gone from one bank to another for a basic salary of £40 million.
Between $16 and $70 million?
Yeah, it's huge bucks.
Barclays is paying out more than $1 billion worth of bonuses to its 400 most prized employees. The bonus pool at Goldman Sachs is even bigger. This may infuriate the rest of us, but Gillian Tett, author of Fool's Gold, says the banks have little choice but to shell out.
The banks are operating in a competitive environment, and there is concern amongst the banks that if they don't pay people well, they could lose some of the key people they need to rebuild their businesses.
The UK government is now weighing up a plan to stamp on the bonus culture before it gets rampant again, to tie bonuses more closely to long-term performance. But, says Gillian Tett, with billions of dollars of taxpayers' cash invested in the banks, the government has to tread carefully.
The challenge to the government is how do you encourage the banks to rebuild their businesses and be profitable again without going back to the bad old ways?
As unemployment rises, so does resentment towards bankers' bonuses. A recent article in Rolling Stone magazine has gotten a lot of play here. It described Goldman Sachs as a great vampire squid wrapped around the face of humanity. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Verizon reported this morning quarterly profits down 7%. And with fixed-line phones on the decline, the name of the game these days is wireless smartphones. And that means everyone is feeling the heat from AT&T and its partnership with the Apple iPhone. Here's Marketplace's Dan Gretsch.
There aren't many Americans left who don't have a cell phone. So when a wireless company wants new customers, it has to steal subscribers from a competitor. Scott Cleland is a telecom analyst with Precursor.
The U.S. has probably the most competitive wireless market in the world, paying the lowest prices, and Americans use more wireless than any other nation in the world.
Wireless companies compete in two directions, the lowest price and the snazziest phone. Industry analyst Jeff Kagan says, despite the recession, smart is trumping cheap.
The smartphone segment of the wireless industry is still exploding. It's the plain old handset market that's actually very soft.
Thanks to an upgraded iPhone, AT&T is persuading people to switch carriers. The company activated 2.4 million iPhone accounts in the second quarter. Still, Verizon Wireless, with its 88 million customers, continues to be top dog. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Former Atlanta Falcons quarterback Michael Vick is a free man, sort of. Free as in out of prison and free to leave his home now after being locked up for helping to operate a dogfighting ring. But Vic has been an expensive athlete, and now some NFL teams think he's an expensive risk. Rico Galliano reports.
This week, the NFL is expected to let Michael Vick return to the league once he serves a four-game suspension. But will any team want to hire a guy convicted of running a venture that involved dog killing? Kenneth Shropshire, a professor of sports business at the Wharton School, says possibly.
If he does play and he leads your team to great victories, it could be a compelling story of a great comeback. The negative is that protests could mount if he has not taken enough positive PR steps.
For example, animal charity work. But Shropshire says in sports, the best PR is winning. Just look at baseball players embroiled in steroid controversies.
The allegations against Mark McGwire, for example, came after his career was over, so there was not a chance to come back. Whereas you see other players that go back and have some success, that seems to help fans get beyond whatever's taken place.
Which is why if the NFL doesn't hire Vic, he'd be wise to sign with the UFL. The commissioner of that fledgling football league has strongly suggested he'd welcome Vic. Of course, with just four teams thus far, the UFL has a lot less to lose. In Los Angeles, I'm Rico Galliano for Marketplace.
A two-day meeting between U.S. and Chinese officials that kicks off today in Washington, what officials are calling a strategic and economic dialogue. Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner is there, as is Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, President Obama as well. There's just something about the relationship, though, between the United States and China, how we deal with one another and how the Chinese deal with our Treasury. Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan is joining us now to talk about that relationship. Good morning, Alan.
Morning, Steve.
So what's up with this relationship? Who needs whom more?
Well, they both need each other a lot, and that's a big change over a few years ago, because the United States used to be the global hegemon financially, to use a fancy word, and now it isn't.
China says in this dialogue that's happening this week that it would like both countries to unwind stimulus policies implemented to boost each economy. What's it mean by that?
The Chinese, as we know, are the big buyers and holders of Treasury securities, and you don't have to be a genius to see that the United States is in a situation where the value of these securities to China is going to decline. So if I were the Chinese and I cared about my investment, I'd want the United States government to stimulate a little less, save a little more, and preserve the value of the dollar.
So what would happen if China stopped buying them?
Well, I mean, it would be horrendous, but that's not how it would happen. It's not as if one day China would just say, we're not buying this anymore, because the people who run the Chinese central bank aren't stupid. And to say that would send the price of the dollar and the price of Treasury securities plummeting, and they would hurt themselves. They would just do it gradually, which is what they're doing, asserting their equality with the United States, which is what they've been doing for months. And just go on. I mean, life is not television. There are not dramatic events. You just wake up one day in the financial markets and stuff has happened.
So where does this relationship go then, Alan?
Well, the Chinese theoretically need us as an outlet for their goods. We need them because someone's going to buy all these Treasury securities. But when it ceases to be mutually beneficial, something bad is going to happen. And the Chinese are, you know, flexing their muscles, which is probably what I would do if I were Chinese. And it's going to go where it's going to go. But the United States has lost a lot of its freedom of maneuver, which is a point we've made here for a long time. And this is just another example of it.
Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan joining us this morning. Alan, thanks.
You're welcome, Steve.
Share your thoughts with us inside our website, marketplace.org, or online host and blogger Scott Jagow is there with the scratch pad inside the website marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great Monday.
American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.